Hello there, I'm Rob, a producer on the Black Country Talking News, and I'm just here to let you know that this week's edition is for the 19th of January 2022.
Hello, and welcome to the Black Country Talking News, brought to you by sightloss charity Beacon Centre. We're pleased to confirm that the Talking News is now available via Alexa. All you need to do is say, "Alexa, play Black Country Talking News." Our Talking News service is also available via the following methods: calling 01902 213 210, visiting our website www.beaconvision.org/talking-news, as a podcast on the Black Country Radio website, on Spotify and Apple Podcasts by simply searching Beacon Black Country Talking News and hitting the subscribe button, and on your mobile or tablet device by downloading the free British Wireless for the Blind Talking News application from your App Store. We hope you enjoy this week's edition.
Thank you, Simon. Speaking for us this week, we have myself, Rob, Mina, Craig, Roger, Helen, Angela, Rupert, Ed, Liz, Ian, Pete, and of course, Flashback Roger. In this week's edition, we have an update from Beacon, some local news from the Black Country. We have the quiz with Mina, news from West Bromwich Albion and Wolves, a Did You Know section from Flashback Roger, the weather, information about video magnifiers, a history of local place names, Craig's Black Country Joke Book, and rounding all that off with a piece from TNF about winter woodland walks. However, we start this week with our Guess the Sound question. I'm going to play a sound clip, and all you've got to do is simply guess what it is. So, here's this week's clip. Have a think on that, and Mina will reveal the answer later, alongside the usual quiz answers. We now have, as always, our first block of local news, brought to us by Angela, Ed, myself Rob, Ian, and first up, we have Liz.
Passengers were left shocked and bewildered when Metro services were suspended on November the 13th after cracks were found in the trams, raising urgent safety concerns. On December the 15th, the first repaired trams and a few of the brand new CAF Urbos began running a skeleton service between Wolverhampton, St George's and Bull Street only. On Friday, West Midlands Metro announced passengers can look forward to a full service resuming from Sunday, January the 30th, 6 weeks after an optimistic prediction of a resumption after 4 weeks in the days after the suspension. A spokesman said, "Ongoing repairs to the West Midlands Metro tram fleet are progressing well, and we expect to be able to return regular services to Grand Central and the library by January the 30th. This is dependent on tram availability. A service between Wolverhampton and Bull Street has been maintained over the last month, and this was achieved with a mix of fully repaired trams from the existing fleet and some new vehicles we were able to fast-track into service. Engineers from both West Midlands Metro and the tram manufacturer have been working around the clock to ensure the new repairs are robust and that once a full service resumes, it will be safe, reliable and sustainable." Fallings Park councillor and member of the West Midlands Transport Delivery Committee, Chris Burden, said, "This is fantastic news for Wolverhampton residents, even if it is overdue. Centenary Square is an important destination for workers and leisure users alike. We need this link open to build trust in our transport system." He added, "If we want people to take public transport seriously, we need to take their concerns seriously too. We need to keep the pressure on the West Midlands Combined Authority to deliver a service which works for passengers and works for taxpayers."
Claims that West Midlands Police was uniquely targeted by government austerity measures has been branded patently untrue by a senior minister. Kit Malthouse MP has hit out at West Midlands Police and Crime Commissioner Simon Foster for blaming the government for his force's chronic financial position. Labour PCC Mr Foster says his force has lost £175 million in funding over 10 years, which has impacted on its ability to fight crime. He has warned of an imminent budget black hole and is set to raise council tax by £10 a year. Policing Minister Mr Malthouse said, "I hear repeatedly from the Police and Crime Commissioner in the West Midlands that his financial situation is down to the actions of the Conservative government and that somehow austerity was uniquely targeted at West Midlands Police, which was somehow singled out. This is patently untrue, not least because police funding is distributed by a legally enforceable formula that does not discriminate by area. To say that somehow the financial problems of the West Midlands Police are down to the government, when other police forces are faring much better, is economical with the truth, shall we say." Mr Foster has accused Mr Malthouse of ignoring the actions of his government over the past decade and questioned why funding for West Midlands Police was down £17 million on Greater Manchester Police. "The formula used by the government to distribute police funding has been a severe issue for the West Midlands Police for many years," he said. "We are losing out on around £40 million a year. Chief Constables campaigned on this for over a decade, highlighting that urban forces were hit much harder by austerity than rural areas. Due to historic decisions, West Midlands Police also has the lowest council tax in the country, meaning the £175 million of cuts the forces have faced have hit us even harder."
The work to transform part of Wolverhampton city centre into a pedestrianised area and box park has killed off trade and left business owners reckoning with a knock-on effect on their futures. Under the £15.7 million plans, Victoria Street will be closed to traffic permanently, while a new box park will be created on the area where Victoria Street meets Skinner Street and Bell Street. Other work will see the carriageway on North Street moved closer to the Civic Centre, giving those attending the Civic Hall a safer area to gather, with Mitre Fold becoming a pedestrian zone. Initial work started last year, but this week Victoria Street permanently closed and new diversions were introduced at either end of the road, which will be in place for 8 months. While many hope the changes will bring more visitors to the area behind the Mander Centre in the long run, for now business owners are having to put up with roadworks and the resultant reduced footfall. One unexpected problem includes delivery drivers not being able to reach takeaways to collect orders from platforms like Uber Eats. Mark Kaledger owns Earl's Sandwich Shop on North Street, just down the road from the Civic Hall, and said he hadn't realised how much the work would impact him. He said, "I was told there would be things in place to enable car flow of traffic, making the shop accessible for deliveries, but I didn't think it would impact me this badly. Delivery drivers are finding they have to park a fair way from the shop. While we've seen a lot of cancellations on orders from Uber Eats and Just Eat, platforms we depend on because of people working at home because they can't get close enough to the premises. It's had a huge impact as we're seeing less footfall at peak times. But I have to hope that the work being done can bring more people through eateries with tables and chairs outside. But it's the question of when, as we need to survive."
Bus services across the West Midlands are set to be cut and fares may increase when emergency COVID funding ends in March, transport bosses have warned. During the pandemic, operators have been propped up by the government's bus recovery grant, which was brought in to cover losses incurred due to reduced passenger numbers. A report to the West Midlands Combined Authority says operators faced a potential cliff edge when the funding stops at the end of March and were likely to slash services to make ends meet. The region's bus network has been cut by 4% since March 2020, while passenger numbers in November last year were down 25% of pre-COVID levels. The report says that as of October 2021, the region's bus network received half of its income from public funding sources, up from 27% pre-pandemic. It says the government's bus recovery grant, negotiated directly between government and bus operating groups, and covering some of the operator losses, is due to finish at the end of March 2022. Currently, bus operators are telling us that the amount of money available from government is not what was expected and may result in some network reductions even prior to the end of March 2022. Whilst it is highly unlikely that government will not provide any funding at all after March 2022, the fact that there is currently no committed funding represents an incredible challenge, which is being talked about across the industry as a potential cliff edge. Given such a substantial reduction in passenger revenue, which is highly unlikely to have recovered to pre-COVID levels by then. The report adds, "It is almost certain that in the face of National Bus Recovery Grant ending or being reduced, that operators will seek to rationalise their operations in order to remain financially viable, meaning that the network faces risks to service cuts fare increases and reliance on increased subsidy.
Schools continue to battle against COVID absences among pupils and staff, but thanks to a wave of effort, classes have continued, say head teachers. With the emergency of the virulent Omicron variant plaguing the start of the new term, it was feared schools may be plunged into crisis once again and be forced to shut doors. But head teachers across the region this week told how they are coping despite the challenges and have not had to take any drastic action yet due to the efforts of staff, pupils and parents. Schools have reopened for the new term with measures in place for testing and isolating pupils with positive tests, including mask wearing and lateral flow tests. Shireland Hall Primary Academy in Smethwick is one of many schools to have seen COVID-related absences, but Vice Principal Fiona Wilkes said the school had been able to prepare for it. She said, during the first week back, 5% of pupils and 9% of staff have tested positive, which is lower than anticipated. We believe this is due to good take-up on lateral flow testing, which means cases have been identified early and non-symptomatic staff and pupils have remained at home and so minimised transmission. We have also maintained many COVID control measures from the autumn term, such as virtual assemblies and staggered lunchtimes. Additionally, lateral flow tests on days 6 and 7 of absence have also reduced the impact on learning, as staff and pupils have been able to return earlier than they previously would have. Ms Wilkes said the school had not had to close any classes due to staff absence and had included the advanced booking of 2 agency teachers in its plans for the new year. She said there was still a concern about potential staff absences and the waiting period for lateral flow tests to arrive, as well as families returning from Christmas holidays abroad, but said the school was able to face the challenges.
Now it's time to hand over to Helen, who has for us this week's Beacon Update.
Hi everyone, it's Helen. Well, I don't know about you, but this week's roundup felt like it came around pretty quickly. Maybe it's a new year, or maybe I'm just getting old. One of those things, the years start flying by, eh? Well, this week at Beacon, we were quite excited because we held our first ever Beacon Coffee Morning. Did you manage to make it for coffee and a catch-up? If not, don't worry, as they'll be taking place every second Friday of the month at our Sedgley Centre and on the fourth Friday of the month at our Stourbridge Centre. It will cost £5 to attend, and to book a spot, call 01902 880 111. We'd love for you to come along to the next one. Next this week, what would you do with £1,000? I could think of plenty of things, I'll tell you. But perhaps you'd maybe book a summer holiday. We all want one of them this year. Go on a shopping spree, or even invest in your future. Well, if you sign up to the Wolves Lottery, you'll be in with a chance of winning that every week. You'll also be supporting people with sight loss with a donation of 65 pence from every £1 played made to the Beacon Centre. It costs just £1 a week to enter, and you can find out more on our website, www.beaconvision.org. That's www.beaconvision.org. Now, have you done anything to mark the start of 2022 yet? Maybe you're going for a new you this new year. Well, whatever you're up to, if you're having a wardrobe clear out, why not make a difference at the same time and donate your unwanted items to Beacon? We can sell your good quality clothing, homeware and even furniture in our shops to raise funds so we can support people with sight loss. You can find out where our shops are located and how to arrange a free furniture collection on our website, beaconvision.org. That's beaconvision.org. And on the subject of donations, if you've been left with an unwanted gift or two after the festive season, we can help with that as well. Whether it's socks and slippers or booze and bath sets, rather than let them gather dust, you can donate them to us and help us support someone with sight loss. We'd be so grateful for any unwanted gifts that we can use as raffle and tombola prizes at events throughout the year. You can drop them off at any of our shops around the region or just email us on supporters@beaconvision.org. As usual, we'd like to say thanks to everyone for all your continued support with our shops. Lastly this week, are you planning an event in 2022? Or maybe you're hoping to attend some. I know I am. Well, did you know that our sight loss advisors can give community group talks about life with a visual impairment and showcase our services at events around the region? If you're based in the Black Country or South Staffordshire and you'd like to find out more, call our team on 01902 880 111 Monday to Friday. That's 01902 880 111 Monday to Friday. That's it for this week. Hopefully, I'll be back to catch up with you all again soon. Bye-bye.
Cheers for that update, Helen. Up next, we have another block of local news. And starting this, we hear from Angela.
A COVID-19 survivor has recalled the devastating moment she was told she had lost her unborn baby to the virus. Rachel from Bilston is now urging others to have the vaccine, particularly those in Black and minority ethnic communities who are reluctant to do so. The 38-year-old mother of one, who was admitted to New Cross Hospital after suffering COVID symptoms when she was 19 weeks pregnant, became so ill she didn't even know she had given birth. "I was heavily sedated a lot of the time, and from what I'm told by my family, my chances weren't looking very good," added Rachel. "They were trying to get the baby to survive to 28 weeks, but unfortunately at 24 weeks my son was born stillborn. I didn't actually know I'd given birth. I was on drugs, so they wanted to tell me when I wasn't sedated, and the obstetrician told me a few days later. My emotions were disbelief. One minute you're having a scan and a gender reveal, naming the baby and getting excited, and then there was this sudden loss. Rachel wanted to have the vaccine when she was pregnant, but at the time there was still uncertainty over whether expectant women should have it. I did initially go to get the vaccine, but at the time the advice was not to have it," she said. "I thought I'd have the vaccine when I'd had the baby, but it wasn't meant to be." Rachel is now fully vaccinated and wants anyone who isn't to do likewise, especially those in Black and minority ethnic communities. "I would say take it. It's a 2-minute thing that can save months of agony if you end up like I was," she urged. "It's really important. In the news it says there's quite a low take-up. It would appear Black and ethnic minority women, if they're pregnant and unvaccinated, are more likely to be in intensive care. The evidence and data is there."
A Brierley Hill specialist precision engineering business has gone into administration with a loss of 56 jobs. First Components on Wallows Industrial Estate, Wallows Road, has been going for nearly 18 years. The company entered administration last week, a situation described as terrible for investors, employees and subcontractors by Dudley Council's Deputy Leader Judy Foster. Diana Frangou and Gareth Harris of RSM UK Restructuring Advisory, Birmingham, were appointed as joint administrators. The business served a wide range of industries, including aerospace, automotive, medical, through to electrical, white goods and general engineering. It had lost a significant contract, which was having an impact on the company's cash flow, and also recently went through a change in ownership, which impacted its ability to continue to trade. Diana Frangou said the cash flow issues coupled with the change in ownership and structure resulted in administrators being appointed to protect not only the creditors' interests but most importantly ensure the employees were not left in abeyance. "Regrettably, we have had to make the entire workforce redundant and our first priority is to assist them both with making their claims from the Redundancy Payments Office and offering general support and advice in these difficult circumstances." Dudley Council Deputy Leader Judy Foster of Brockmore and Pensnet Ward, where the site is based, said, "This is absolutely terrible news for the people who have invested in and run the business and terrible news for the employees, possible subcontractors and those who they bought parts from. I wish the administrators every success in finding a new buyer and hopefully the new operator will consider taking back those people who have found themselves out of work."
More than 85,000 people in the Black Country and Staffordshire have received a booster dose of the COVID-19 vaccine since before Christmas, new figures show. Government data showed 85,120 people received their third jab between December the 20th and January the 9th, taking the total who have had a booster to 629,148 in the area. It comes after scientists said boosters are highly effective against hospitalisation for older adults, with second booster jabs for the most vulnerable ruled out for now. In Wolverhampton, 16,439 people received their booster jab over the three-week period. It brings the total number of people in the city to get a third shot to 112,474, while in Dudley it was 20,599 for the booster and 169,503 getting a third shot. Meanwhile, data from UK Health Security Agency shows boosters are 90% effective against admission to hospital from the Omicron variant for the over 65s. Protection for those with two doses dropped to about 70% after 3 months and to 50% after 6 months. Professor Wei Shen Lim, the Joint Committee on Vaccination and Immunisation's chairman of COVID-19 immunisation, said the data emphasised the value of a booster jab. He said, "The current data show the booster dose is continuing to provide high levels of protection against severe disease, even for the most vulnerable older age groups. For this reason, the committee has concluded there is no immediate need to introduce a second booster dose, though this will continue to be reviewed. As the highly infectious Omicron variant continues to spread, the amount of time people with COVID-19 in England have to spend in self-isolation is to be cut to 5 full days to reduce the staffing crisis across sectors, including health, education and public transport."
Dudley Town Centre cannot cope with the new bus interchange and metro being built at the same time. West Midlands public transport chiefs have been warned. Trade is suffering over the disruption and traffic jams around Castle Hill, where the tram tracks being laid since last March after months of roadworks replacing utility pipes. Councillors sitting on the West Midlands Combined Authority Transport Delivery Committee were told starting the new Dudley bus interchange would cause chaos in the town. Gornal Councillor David Stanley raised his concerns at the Transport Delivery Committee. He said, "What is concerning me is the length of time it is taking for the metro on Castle Hill after seeing all the destruction of Dudley Town Centre. I would hate to see both these projects being done at the same time. Castle Hill being partly used because of the metro and the building of the new bus interchange and all that comes along with diverting all the buses. Dudley is tight anyway, and these projects are next to each other. Work is not progressing on the metro as fast as I thought. I was up there the other week to look at what it looks like, and it did not seem to be moved at all since last month. What I'm worried about is the trade in the town. A lot of them are suffering at the moment because of how hard it is to get into town. The new £24 million Dudley interchange will replace the bus station and will include tram and bus stops. Both the metro and the interchange are supposed to be finished in 2023. A lead contractor has been picked to build the project and they are currently working with Dudley Council and the Combined Authority."
Preparations are now underway for the May local elections in Wolverhampton, where a third of the city's councillor seats will be contested. The elections, which take place on May the 5th, will be the second set of polls to be held in the city during the pandemic. A number of changes will be brought in for this year's elections, most notably to improve postal voting and to improve ballot box receipts. In a report to the Council's Governance and Ethics Committee, the Council's Electoral Services Manager, Laura Noonan, said the election board, chaired by the returning officer, now meets on a monthly basis all year round. A detailed risk register is reviewed at each board meeting. The key risk relating to this election continues to be operating in a COVID-secure environment. Since December the 10th last year, everyone entering a polling station and count venue is legally required to wear a face covering unless they're exempt, added the report. Notice of election will be published on March the 9th and the nomination period will run from 10 a.m. on March the 24th until 4 p.m. on April the 5th. The deadline to register to vote is April the 14th, with the deadline to apply to vote by post at 5 p.m. on April the 19th and by proxy at 5 p.m. on April the 25th. There is currently a £192,000 budget set aside to cover the cost of local elections each year.
It's time next to give our brains a workout, as we have Mina with this week's quiz questions.
Hello and welcome to this week's Flashback Quiz. All the answers you need can be found later in Flashback Rogers' Did You Know feature. But for now, here are your questions. Are you ready? Question 1. In what year was the first penal colony founded in Australia? Question 2. What was unusual about the Roman god Janus? Question 3. What happens more in January than in other months? Question 4. What is the coldest temperature recorded in 1971? Question 5. What is the birthstone for January? And finally, question 6. What is most often done in January? As always, I'll be back to reveal the answers later in the show. But for now, good luck.
Thank you for those questions, Mina. I did detect a bit of a theme there, but we'll find out the answers later. Up next, we have another block of local news. And starting this one off, we'll hear first from Angela.
A petition has been raised calling for a GP surgery that was relocated at the beginning of the pandemic to be fully reopened. The Highoaks surgery was transferred from Pensnet to Briley Hill Health and Social Care Centre. Councillor Rebecca Collins, a member of Dudley Metropolitan Borough Council, has raised a petition after receiving complaints from residents about the distance they now need to travel to access healthcare. However, she needs to collect 3,000 signatures on the petition before she can get the issue debated by the full council. Councillor Collins said, residents have to travel more than 1.8 miles to the surgery, and a number of these are elderly and are now not able to easily access healthcare. Some have told me they cannot pay the £10 taxi fare for a round trip to the surgery, and there is no direct bus route, and people have to walk down a long road. I have had several talks with officials, and although they have put a survey online for people's views, some people do not have access to computers. Residents want the return of the surgery, and several years ago, the people of Pensnet were promised a new health centre, but this never materialised. They have a right to be able to access healthcare easily and when they need it.
A troubled former Wolverhampton pub with a history of serious crime dating back more than 20 years will be turned into a food store and apartment block if plans get the go-ahead. The Talisman in the Scotlands area of the city has been a hotbed of criminal activity for decades, with a fatal shooting taking place in the car park in 2001, regular major police raids and repeated incidents of public disorder. In 2018, a gang was rumbled running a massive drugs empire from the premises, which led to the arrest and conviction of six people. It was later revealed deals worth up to £10,000 had been taking place since 2016, alongside a cocaine courier service running to other parts of the city from the pub. A search of the property also uncovered a hoard of stolen power tools, which were being sold by one of the gang members. Another raid on the pub yielded a huge stash of cannabis and equipment and facilities for growing the drug. Regulars launched a campaign to save the pub in 2016, but it finally closed permanently in December 2018, the second time the venue had been shut down in 2 years. In May last year, a severe blaze, believed to be arson, gutted a large part of the pub, which had remained boarded up since its closure. City Council planners this week received an application from Mr. Paul Sangira of Dudley-based SEP Properties Limited, who is seeking to redevelop the premises into a Heron food store with 18 residential apartments above. Planning officials are yet to make a decision on the proposals.
A new Lidl store is set to open in the Black Country within the next week. Bosses have confirmed that the new branch on the Maryhill Retail Park in Briley Hill will open for the first time on Thursday, January the 20th. The branch is part of the company's ongoing £1.3 billion expansion and regeneration plans across the country and will create around 40 new jobs. The new supermarket will feature a 1,309 square metre sales area, along with facilities including an in-store bakery, customer toilets, 163 car parking spaces, and ample parking for bicycles. The store opening times will be 8 a.m. to 10 p.m. from Monday to Saturday and 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. on Sunday. To mark the opening, customers will be able to find exclusive deals and offers on selective products. Lidl GB's regional head of property, Ian Ross, said, "It is fantastic that we are able to open our stores and welcome local residents into our highly anticipated store in Briley Hill. We have received overwhelming support from local residents. We would like to thank everyone who has played a part in delivering this new store."
Wolverhampton Housing bosses will purchase a quarter of new homes being built at a former school site in the city to be used exclusively for affordable living. WV Living, a subsidiary of the council, set up in 2016 to provide a range of new housing across the city, is in the process of developing the former Northcote school site in Bushbury with 178 homes due to be completed in 2024. The school in Northwood Park Road closed in 2014 and the premises were finally demolished in 2018. Once completed, the new estate will consist of a mixture of 2, 3 and 4 bedroomed homes, with the council set to purchase 29 homes for affordable rent and 16 homes for shared ownership. In a report to Cabinet, Karen Beasley, the council's interim service manager for housing strategy and policy, said, "These 45 properties will be allocated through Homes in the City's choice-based letting system. Marketing of the shared ownership units will be managed by the council's sales and marketing agent once they are appointed. The council will enter into a contract using a standard form of development agreement with WV Living, including staged payments. Planning permission for the development was granted in October last year, including the provision for affordable housing. However, earlier proposals for the development had drawn criticism from people concerned about the impact the new estate would have on existing roads and facilities. Views in favour of the proposal included support for new housing needed in the area, particularly affordable property. Locational advantages given the adjacent park, together with the jobs and skills that would be encouraged by the work."
Pensnet's Sainsbury's Local is shutting up shop next week. The High Street store opened in 2013 and will be taken over by Budgens in February. Staff have been informed about the closure and the majority will move to other Sainsbury's stores locally. A Sainsbury's spokesperson said, "We have made the difficult decision to close our Dudley Pensnet's Local store, which will close next month. Customers can continue to shop with us at nearby stores including Gornal Wood Local and Amblecote. Colleagues had the opportunity to transfer with the store to Sammy Limited and apply for roles at other Sainsbury stores. We understand this will be an unsettling time for those affected and we are supporting them in any way we can." Replacement store Budgens is one of the oldest names on the British High Street, being founded in 1872 and has 260 stores across the country. Local shopkeepers under its brand will take advantage of bulk buying, savings and deliveries 6 days a week. A spokesman for the chain said, "Budgens stores are run and owned by people who care about the quality, provenance and value of their food. As individual stores serving their own local communities, they are closer to local issues and therefore able to recognise and cater services to their community's needs."
Up now, we hear from Pete, who has for us a piece all about video magnifiers and how they may be a benefit to you.
If you're struggling with reading and need a magnifier, have you ever considered a video magnifier, or sometimes known as a digital magnifier? Well, Beacon have a range of video magnifiers that you can come in and try. Now, a video magnifier, you can increase or decrease the magnification so you can turn it up a bit or you can turn it up quite a lot to help you read. You can change contrast settings on a video magnifier, so you can look at something in true colour, or you could change the contrast to black on white, or white on black, or yellow on black, or black on yellow. It's whatever works best for you, so there's a range of combinations there that you can try to find the right one. You can also freeze images on a video magnifier. So let's say there's something in your fridge, a piece of some food. You could take a little picture, because the angle's a bit difficult to read of it, and then bring the magnifier away and then zoom it up. So if it's something like the sell-by dates or ingredients on food, you can read it comfortably there. So video magnifiers range from small handheld magnifiers you can sit comfortably in an armchair to read with, up to medium-sized ones, which are about the size of laptops, and then there's desktop magnifiers with big, large 24-inch screens, which really make magnification strong. So, if you would like to try a video magnifier to see if that would help you, you're very welcome to. Just call Beacon's Sight Loss Advisors for an appointment. And remember, bring something you struggle to read with you. So if you'd like to try a video magnifier, give us a call on 01902 880 111 and ask for a sight loss advisor. 01902 880 111.
Cheers for filling us in on those, Pete. Up now, we have our final block of local news. And starting this one, we hear first the voice of Ed.
A musical that had been set to hit the Wolverhampton Grand Theatre has been cancelled, with producers citing rising COVID-19 cases and self-isolation requirements. Bring It On, the musical, a story about cheerleader culture, inspired by the film of the same name, was due to play at the Grand from the 26th of January to the 29th. The show will now, however, end its run in London on the 22nd of January and will not commence in Wolverhampton the following week. Celador Worldwide, the producers of the musical, said, "Cancelling 13 performances has resulted in an overwhelming loss of income for the production during a peak period that would otherwise have provided a vital financial backbone of the tour. This lost income, amounting to hundreds of thousands of pounds, has sadly rendered the remainder of the tour financially unsustainable. It would be irresponsible for us to continue, and we therefore have no option but to cancel the remainder of the tour. Customers who have purchased tickets for the tour will be contacted by their point of purchase for refunds."
The countdown has started for the Commonwealth Games as Birmingham launched the search for the Queen's Baton Bearers. 2,022 inspirational people are wanted for the once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to carry the Queen's Baton in a relay around England, a tradition that builds anticipation for the forthcoming Games. And to launch the search, a commemorative mural was officially unveiled in Birmingham on Tuesday by four-time Paralympic champion Kadina Cox, who was the first baton bearer to receive the baton from the Queen last year. The Paralympian said, "I was incredibly proud to be the first baton bearer at the launch of the Queen's Baton Relay last year, and it's now a real privilege to be in Birmingham to help launch the search to find even more baton bearers across the country." The commemorative mural is amazing and perfectly captures the spirit of the Games. It's been fantastic seeing the public's reaction today. The Queen's Baton Relay is a wonderful chance for people to get involved and nominate someone inspiring they know for this once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. To nominate and find out more, visit birmingham2022.com/QBR.
Dudley's new Duncan Edwards Leisure Centre has allowed a sneak peek inside before it opens to the public on January the 24th. Boasting an array of facilities, it's an exciting new arrival for the Black Country, featuring state-of-the-art equipment. At the heart of the centre is the 25-metre swimming pool with 8 lanes. Meanwhile, a teaching pool with spectator area will provide support for anyone taking their first plunge into the water. There's also a 4-court sports hall suitable for badminton and indoor football. But the real star of the show is the Immersive Cycle Studio, the first in the Black Country. Immersive cycling provides a digitally created world for cyclists, giving them the power to ride through any environment in the world or beyond. Instead of staring at the numbers steadily going up on a screen, participants could be transported to beaches, jungles, or faraway lands, although it's yet to be revealed exactly which digital utopias you could be taken to. There's also a 100-station gym and 2 exercise studios. Dudley Council is running an offer of a 12-month membership for the price of 10 at £320 or 90 pence a day. For more information, call 01384 812 800. The new leisure centre is part of a £1 billion investment in the town, which includes a new Midland Metro extension, a very light rail innovation centre and a university campus.
A Wolverhampton author is celebrating after the publication of her second book. Gina Baines' new book, Angel's Journey, is on the bookshelves now, and she is searching for an animator to turn her story into a cartoon. The book follows the adventures of a female who has magical powers and vows to help anyone who has given up hope. Angel's Journey is the follow-up to Gina's first book, Angel and the Companion. She said, "I'm so pleased Angel's Journey is out there now, and I really believe it can help anyone who is down and needs a bit of hope. It's a fantasy story, but grounded in reality. Angel wants to help those who are in trouble, and the main message is for people to never give up hope." Gina works for Select Care and praised her bosses for supporting her dreams to be an author. She added, "The next stage now is finding an animator to turn my words into pictures and film. I think it would be wonderful for my story to be seen by children and adults across the world. I sent my last book to the Queen and was delighted to receive a letter from her congratulating me about Angel and the Companion, so I will be sending her a copy of Angel's Journey as well. I hope she likes it." Angel's Journey is available in Waterstones, WH Smith, Amazon and in local libraries.
A raccoon who was rescued from a puppy farm and now lives a happy new life at an animal sanctuary has fallen ill and been hospitalised, her carers said. Broxwood Animal Sanctuary in Sedgley has posted a message across its social media channels about Fiona, a raccoon living at the sanctuary. The sanctuary said Fiona, who is one of the most popular animals for sponsorships, has been poorly over the last few weeks and was back in hospital after being discharged last week. A spokesman for Broxwood Animal Sanctuary said, "We've had a hard couple of weeks caring for our little Fiona, who we're sad to say is quite poorly. We're fighting hard to get her better and have some of the best vets and nurses working with her. But today she has been hospitalised again after being discharged last week. We're so worried, but she's in the very best place right now with everything she needs and round-the-clock care and treatment. Not having her here with us is heartbreaking, but we need to give her every possible chance right now. Fingers and paws crossed for our dear Fiona. To stand in the vet surgery and not have to think twice if we can give her the treatments she needs, the many tests, overnight stays, because of the cost, we all know how fast a vet bill can mount up. Thanks to your donations is something we can't thank you enough for."
Now it's time to hear from our ever knowledgeable Flashback Roger for another Did You Know feature.
Hello everyone. I'd like to start by telling you that my New Year's resolutions are going according to my pledge, but I'll be fibbing, because they are in fact going downhill as predicted. Instead, I'll confine myself to sharing some more topical snippets. Now then, did you know that? The first penal colony in Australia was established in January 1788 by the British in order to relieve overcrowded English prisons. Serious crimes like murder and rape were punishable by death, but petty offences, such as stealing, were deemed worthy of a one-way ticket to Australia. Some historical names for January include Wolfonath, which came from the Anglo-Saxons because it was the month hungry wolves would come scavenging. But the name for January comes from the Roman god Janus, who is always depicted with two heads. He uses one head to look back on the year before and the other head to look forward to the new year. And whatever the reason, couples tend to separate or divorce more so in January, and so it's been dubbed the divorce month. Many say that it's the result of the prolonged holiday and having to spend too much time together, Others say it's the end of their stressful year, or perhaps it's just because January brings fresh hopes for a happier life. In the Northern Hemisphere, January, of course, is the coldest month. The lowest temperature ever recorded in the United States was minus 80 degrees Fahrenheit. This was recorded by a weather observer at Prospect Creek Camp in Alaska on January the 23rd, 1971. It was so cold that a person's eyeballs would begin to freeze after only a few seconds of being outside. Ooh, that sounds too cold for me. The birthstone for January is the garnet. This rare gem comes in a variety of different colours. However, the most popular and lucrative garnets are deep shade of red. The word garnet is derived from the Middle Eastern English word gurnet, which means dark red. This also shares its original with the seed-filled fruit, the pomegranate. Well, who knew that? January has always been a popular time to book holidays for the coming year. And is it any wonder when everyone is looking forward to warmer weather later on in the year? Television adverts for sunny and exotic breaks start to fill our screens as soon as or before Santa's booked his sleigh in for its annual service, and thus tempting the winter weary to book up for bargain breaks at home or abroad. Any road up, it's too early for me to be thinking of polishing up my bucket and spade, but I can dream all the more of the sun-kissed beaches of Weston-super-Mare or Rill, can't I? Well, till next week then, I'll sign off and go and see if I can squeeze into me speedos, though I think it'll be quite a while yet before I'm beach ready, if ever. So I'll say bye for now. Ta-ra a bit. Ta-ra.
Now we have our sportsman Ian giving you all the latest football news from Wolves and West Bromwich Albion.
Hello, I'm Ian and here's your latest football news. Wolves overcame a late Southampton fight back to secure a Premier League double over the South Coast side. After Raul Jimenez's goal separated the sides in the reverse fixture in September, the Mexican striker struck again when his first half penalty put Wolves ahead. The Saints had plenty of opportunities of their own, but Jose Sa denied them before captain Connor Cody stepped up to double his side's advantage. Wolves looked set to see out the game before James Ward-Prowse smashed in a trademark but sensational 30-yard free kick to give the visitors hope. Southampton then hit the crossbar before substitute Adama Traore scored his first goal of the season to hand Wolves their third consecutive win in all competitions. After the game, Bruno Lage heaped praise on Totti Gomez for his composed debut and hints the young defender could stay with Wolves beyond January. He said, "Without Kiana and Marçal, we don't have too many players to play there, and I prefer to continue with Leander as a midfielder. The kid did very well. It's a question of opportunity for him. 2 weeks ago, he was on his holidays and we needed him. Now, after 2 weeks, he has a chance to play in the Premier League. It's about opportunities. In that moment, I preferred to go with him. I don't want to put pressure on him because he's played one game and he's helped us to win this hard game, but he looks like he has potential." Wolves next have a trip to London as they take on Brentford this Saturday. It was a day that was supposed to be all about Albion's new striker, but in the end, it was an old one that came back to haunt them, with Charlie Austin netting the only goal to see QPR secure a 1-0 win at Loftus Road. In what was an open and entertaining game in the capital, Albion were the better team in the first half, before QPR had a flurry of chances shortly after the restart. The introduction of the man Albion fans wanted to see, Daryl Dyke, helped swing the momentum back towards Valerian Ismail's side. But QPR then threw on Austin, with the game end-to-end from that point, and it was the 32-year-old who won it when he headed in a Chris Willock cross at the back post in the 89th minute. Reflecting on the match, Ismail told reporters, "It was a good game from us. First half we played very well. We didn't have the big chance, but we had the one with Matt Phillips. Second half, QPR came into the game, but it was to be expected. When Dyke came on, he had an impact on the game, but I think the game changer for us is the clear penalty on Townsend. 2 minutes later, we concede a goal. This is a big frustration for us to concede again. We should have had a penalty, and we should have won the game. Ismail was in no doubt his side should have been given a spot kick. It's a clear penalty, 100% penalty," he said. "He comes from behind him, it's clear. Up next, the Baggies welcome Peterborough to the Hawthorns this Saturday.
Cheers for that roundup, Ian. Now we have an article by Dr. Carl Chin all about hidden meanings in place names. If we're nameless, then who are we? Without our names, we have no individuality, no distinct identity. At best, we become an indistinguishable part of a huge and monolithic gathering, such as the Anglo-Saxons, or Victorians, the peasantry, or the working class. At worst, we are lost from history and become as nothing. It is a need that motivates family historians to seek out the names of their ancestors as far back as possible, and to find out whatever they can about them. In that way, our forebears cease to have just existed, instead they continue to have a living presence. Just as family historians enthusiastically search for their kith and kin, so too do local historians keenly look for the names of the earliest people to have lived there locally. In that search, our place names are vital, for they call out to us to hark at what they are telling us, to notice those that gave them their names, and to understand their meanings. If we do not but open our eyes and ears, we can just catch hold of the men and some women who are kept alive in the names of many of our villages, towns, and cities. And we can strain to hear how they describe the features of the land in which they lived. Spoken and written countless times a day they may be, but yet how rarely is the significance of our place names appreciated. They are indeed our signposts to the past, and like all good markers, although they cannot take us on our journey, they can show us where to go. If we truly wish to understand who we are and whence we come from, then it is on the path of place names that we must tread. Some of them in the Black Country and in the adjoining districts reach deep into the beginnings of the Anglo-Saxon England, when bands of Angles moved up the River Trent and thence its tributaries like the Tame, settling and taking over the land from the British. They included extended family units and who took their name from their founder or earliest remembered ancestor. Among them were the Beorma, or the Ingas people, who joined him in setting up a ham, or an estate or homestead. This became known as Birmingham. Another such kinship leader may have been Esne. He and his people, the Esningas, set up, or else took over from the Welsh, a tun, or farmstead, or manor. This was recorded in a document in 996 as Esington. It was changed slightly to become Esington. Similarly, Pattingham brings to mind the estate or homestead of the people of Patter. From the early 600s, the Esignas and the Beorgnas were large tribal groups and they were brought under the sway of the Kingdom of Mercia. By then, those Welsh who remained had intermarried with the newcomers and abandoned their language. Most of their place names were replaced by those in Old English and have forever disappeared. These were added to with new settlements, which had Old English names from the beginning. Then there were those place names which may once have been called after a feature in the landscape, but which were renamed after a man who was given over a lordship to a manor. Darlaston and Tipton fall into this latter category. The Tun element means a manor, and experts have placed its common use to the period between 750 and 950. Thus, Darlaston signifies the manor of Diorlaf. The second earliest recording of it is in 1262, spelt as Divarlaston, although by 1316 its modern form had emerged when it was given as Durlaston. As for Tipton, it was first noted in the Domesday Book of 1086 and was put down as Tibbentone, meaning the estate of Tibber. Willenor is mentioned much earlier and is one of the earliest Black Country place names cited in a document. In 732 it was given as Willenhalch, and as such was the Hal, small valley, of Willa. Sedgley and Dudley are two other place names that remember a person. Both signify Lee or Lay, a clearing, the one of someone called Sedge and the other of a fellow named Dudder. Both places are amongst a noticeable number west of Birmingham which have this element Lee, and which suggests that there was a growth of settlements through clearings in a woodland environment from about 750 to 950. They include Bradley, which meant Braddon Lee, a broad clearing, Rowley, which means the rough or rough clearing, Horsley Heath, which had horses in it, Bentley, which had bent grass, and Langley. This means the Lang clearing, and it would have emerged when the local folk said Lang instead of Long, as they do in the lowlands of Scotland and parts of northeast England. There are also several place names which may be connected to a man. Amblecote means either the cot, cottage, of the Amel, or else the cottage of someone called Amelia. Blockswitch possibly recalls the wick farm of Blocker. It is likely that Cradley means the clearing of cradder or cradle, or perhaps the clearing where cradles were got for the making of hurdle fencing. Cradley Heath is a heathland named after Cradley. Other place names tell us of the landscape of the West Midlands 1,000 years ago or more, when the Angles took over the region from the Welsh. They looked with fresh and open eyes upon the physical features that they saw and named them accordingly. Elsewhere, in what is now the Black Country, there are marked number of place names ending in "all" or "al", from the Anglo-Saxon word "hal". This had different meanings, but in the West Midlands, it was most used to describe a shallow valley. Today, it is often difficult or indeed impossible to make out such a nook, because urbanisation and development had too often destroyed or obscured the original lay of the land. Gornal, both upper and lower, may have a "hal" in the name, but their meaning is difficult to fathom out. Some place name experts feel it denotes the Cionhal, the watermill. However, as David Horowitz makes plain in his outstanding work on the place names of Staffordshire, neither of the Gornals is in a shallow valley, and Upper Gornal is on high ground. Ettinshaw is definitely a hole, and is either a small valley of a man called Etta, or else it is the Etting, a grazing place. It belonged to Bilston, which was first written as Bilsetneton. This spelling provides us with the full meaning of the name. The old belief was that it meant the tun, the estate of Bill's folk. In fact, it indicates the settlement of the Sete folk of the Boyle, meaning the sharp ridge or pointed hill. There is possibly, however, that the Bill part may instead come from the word Bill, meaning sword or physical feature that was sword-shaped. Wordsley is another place that pulls both into the nooks and crannies of English history and into the peculiarities of our place names. It is a clearing that would be derived from the Anglo-Saxon word Wolfwerdas, meaning wolf guard. Wordsley was a part of the large parish of King's Winford, originally Swinford, the ford of the Swine across the River Stour. It later gained the prefix King when it became a royal manor. Nearby, Old Winford belonged to Amblecote and was named Old to distinguish it from King's Winford. A bridge later replaced the ford for the crossing the Stour, hence the name Stour Bridge. The woodland setting of much of the Black Country is emphasised by clearings associated with trees. Briley Hill was the thorny clearing on the hill, thorny because the briars and brambles thereabouts. At West Bromwich, the Anglo-Saxons saw that broom trees were plentiful and placed a wick, a farm, amongst them. Interestingly, many older people still refer to it as Bromwich or Bramwich, and it was first given as just Bromwich in 1086. Not being recorded as West Bromwich until 1322. Another farm was placed amongst the Alders, hence Aldridge. This is the correct meaning as indicated by the oldest spelling, Alwick. It is not the ridge of the Alders as it may seem. As for Woodsetton, this was either the woodland or Setton plantation, or else the animal fold in the woodland, while Coseley was the clearing from which coal, charcoal, was obtained. Just as Aldridge can appear to mean something it is not, so too can Great Bridge. There is a bridge there across the Tame that connects Tipton and West Bromwich, but the great part of the name does not mean big. It comes from the Old English word griot, meaning a gravelly place. Place names such as this are not only fascinating, but also they are important clues to who we are and whence we come. Well, will it be sunny or will it be raining? The person to find out from is Mina, who has for us a weather update.
The weather for this week ahead looks to be again very settled and cloudy, with temperatures hovering around 8 degrees. UV levels are expected to be low throughout the week. The sunrise and sunset times are 8:01 a.m. for the sunrise and 4:41 p.m. for the sunset. For Friday 21st of January, we have sunny intervals and a gentle breeze with a maximum temperature of 7 degrees. On Saturday 22nd of January, we have light cloud and light winds with a maximum temperature of 8 degrees. Moving on to Sunday 23rd of January through to Tuesday 25th of January, we have light cloud and a gentle breeze with a maximum temperature of 8 degrees. And finally, on Wednesday 26th and Thursday 27th of January, we have light cloud and a light wind with a maximum temperature of 7 degrees. So that's your forecast for this week. As always, enjoy the weather.
Thanks for that, Mina. Now we move over to Craig and his Black Country joke book.
Hello, I'm Craig, and I've got for you today some fantastic jokes from your Black Country joke book. What's the difference between a well-dressed man on a unicycle and a poorly dressed man on a bike? A tyre. Here's another one for you. Got you safe from the Black Country and your grandchild is losing at tennis. You die fair, bab. You bams, bams, bats, bad. And finally, ask my mate, have you seen The Voice? He said, of course I had. It's on the bench in my shed next to my woodworking tools. I'm Craig, and that was my Black Country joke book.
Thanks for those, Craig. Up next, we have Mina with the answers to this week's quiz.
Hello, and here are your answers for this week's January-themed flashback quiz. Are you ready? Question 1. In what year was the first Pennell Connolly founded in Australia? The answer, 1788. Question 2. What was unusual about the Roman god Janus? And the answer here is, he had two faces. Question 3. What happens more in January than in other months? And the answer here is, more couples separate or get divorced. Question 4. What is the coldest temperature recorded in 1971? And the answer here is minus 80 degrees Fahrenheit, which is minus 62 Celsius. Question 5. What is the birthstone for January? And the answer here is garnet. And finally, question 6. What is most often done in January? And the answer here, of course, is summer holidays are booked. How did you do? Great, I hope. But if not, there's always another chance to have a go next week. Now, did you get the answer to this week's Guess the Sound question that Rob asked at the start of the show? Here's one more chance to hear it before I tell you the answer. The sound you just heard was a recording of a chipmunk. Now, to end this week's edition of the Black Country Talking News, we have a piece from TNF Soundings about winter woodland walks.
TNF Soundings. Features from across the UK.
I can't pretend that, following the dog attack on my own dog, Max, a few weeks ago, that this winter season has not been overlaid with an extra gloom. He is thankfully on the mend, though the size of his wound will take many weeks to heal. In indomitable form, Max thinks he is fully better, with tail wagging and quizzical looks as to why he cannot chase the ball or tear around the garden. It certainly helps, and I feel my own spirits lifted as I see his return. However, it has dampened my enthusiasm for local walks, hopefully temporarily, but brought home to me just how much my love of the local outdoors is shared with him. We are co-foragers, walking routine walks, but always on the lookout for the new and the unexplored. Walking these routes without him is just not quite the same. Instead, I have driven further afield in Harts and targeted some of our more unusual winter visiting birds, thereby avoiding the more familiar places. I will return to them, but for the moment, indulging the more fanatic elements latent within my hobby, seems to provide a certain purity of focus, allowing me to disengage from the lingering sadness brought about by the attack. It is not the first time that nature has provided an escape, and the tuning in to the natural world also requires a tuning out of everything else, which is perhaps where the solace is found. I visited Hitch Wood recently, lying just south of Hitchin and to the west of Stevenage. Described as one of the finest woods in the North Chilterns, Hitch Wood is part of the St Paul's Waldenbury estate and is famous for its bluebell walks in spring. I, however, came to a winter wood of tall beeches carpeted beneath with this year's leaf fall. On entering such woods, there is an immediate hush and the cathedral effect of pillared trunks and fanned crowns. The light dims and sounds come to the fore, distant echoes of a dog bark and children somewhere enjoying the natural playground. Winter woods require work if you are to find their natural treasures. At first, they seem utterly silent, devoid of life, but then, sure enough, the little contact calls of birds come through the corridors of trees, and a glimpse of movement reveals a grey squirrel poised halfway up a trunk. Seeking these little creatures out can easily pleasantly distract a woodland walk. However, on this particular day, I was on a mission to find one particular bird. Often rightly described as shy and elusive, the bird in question, a hawfinch, is not only difficult to find, but is now very scarce in Hertfordshire. Once a regular breeder, they are now more likely to be encountered as winter visitors, with just a handful of records in most years. It was therefore with great delight that, after some searching, I came upon a flock of five birds, magnificent finches with truly huge bills and plumage matching the colours of autumn. Knowing where to look, at the very top of hornbeam trees, is half the battle, while familiarity with their thin, high-pitched call is the other. Searching for them and finding them felt like extracting hidden gems from the rich woodland load. Buoyed by my success, I drove on to Thurfield Heath, near Royston in North Hertfordshire. A new quarry in mind, the wide open arable expanse along the Icknield Way is home to many overwintering birds, and as the sun sets low, there is no better or more beautiful time to pick out birds of prey drawn to the roosting flocks. The usual kites, buzzards and kestrels were evident, but I was hoping for something rarer. Just as the sun touched down, a small covey of partridges burst up from the long grass, and from their midst a large brown bird rose on long buoyant wings, a short-eared owl. I watched it hunt, following the ditches and momentarily alighting on a bush, piercing yellow eyes staring back at me. Christmas will bring many gifts, but nature's gifts, like the hawfinches and short-eared owl, are there to be unwrapped all year round.
TNS Soundings.
So that's it for another edition of the Black Country Talking News. A reminder to our CD listeners who have received CDs in padded envelopes that you don't need to send anything back to us. If you have a sight loss tip or someone you would like to wish a happy birthday to, just say hello to. Maybe even a poem or talking book you would like reviewed, then please get in touch with us at the Beacon Centre. Call 01902 880111. Email bctn@beaconvision.org or write to us at the Black Country Talking News, Beacon, Wolverhampton Road East, Wolverhampton, WV4 6AZ. We look forward to hearing from you. Thank you for listening, and thank you to all our supporters, donators and volunteers who without their support we would be unable to run this free service. Please note the information and views expressed in this recording does not necessarily represent the views of Beacon or Talking News and were accurate at the time of recording. Mentions of goods and services does not imply endorsement, and whilst every care is taken to supply accurate information, Beacon and Talking News do not undertake liability for any errors. So it's goodbye from all of us, stay safe, have a good week, and we look forward to bringing you next week's edition of the Black Country Talking News. Ta-ra! Thank you.